It was on the Temple Mount, surrounded by fellow worshippers of the God of Abraham, that those assembled experienced true belonging and therefore true meaning. That is why the Talmud insists that one who did not see this celebration never truly experienced joy in one's life. Joy is an extension of meaning, and meaning is found in belonging. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 67, Pilgrims in Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Even in Israel, where archaeological discoveries are an everyday occurrence, nevertheless, they continue to inspire awe. And this can certainly be said about one discovery made in 2004, which, like so many others, was uncovered by accident. It was in 2004 that a drainage leak in Jerusalem, directly south of the Temple Mount, led to the uncovering of an ancient staircase. The steps matched, in architectural detail and design, steps that abutted the southern ancient entryways of the temple complex itself. The two sets of stairs, archaeologists realized, were linked, and they had chanced upon a road leading up to the temple. Thus, as I described in an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal, after 15 years of excavation, the City of David Foundation was able to open what was dubbed the Pilgrimage Road, on which Jews 2,000 years ago would have walked as they came from around the world to visit the temple in Jerusalem during the central festivals of the Jewish faith. To walk those steps, as I have, is to return for a moment to Jewish Jerusalem in the time period that we are recounting right now in our story. And to do that is to realize how central this part of Jewish Jerusalem is to Jewish history. This is surely what former American ambassador to Israel David Friedman meant when he informed the media regarding the site of the Pilgrimage Road, that Israel relinquishing this portion of Jerusalem would be akin to, quote, America returning the Statue of Liberty. End quote. Friedman added that the discovery was of importance to Americans as well as Israelis, as this site in Jerusalem was an embodiment of the biblical values, quote, on which both nations were founded, end quote. This is certainly correct, and it is a point worth expanding upon. For the Pilgrimage Road takes us back to an era in Jerusalem when the city attracted both Jew and non-Jew from all over the world, a beacon of monotheism inside a pagan Roman Empire. And it also reminds us of holiday celebrations that mark the very summit of Jewish joy. Many of the events in Herodian Jerusalem were violent and distressing, the monarch's murders surpassing those in Shakespearean tragedies. But we must also remember the high points in this period, for remembering Second Temple Jerusalem in its glory teaches us about all that the city is called to be. The temple plaza created by Herod had entrances on all sides, but perhaps the most prominent ones would have been situated in the west and southern sides of the Temple Mount. To the west, worshippers would have come from what was called the Upper City, the region where what is now known as the Old City is found today, entering over spans such as what is now known as Robinson's Arch. But it was to the south, from the original Jerusalem, the City of David, that countless pilgrims would have ascended. In coming from all over the world, these pilgrims were obeying a biblical commandment. Deuteronomy, again as I explained in my op-ed, obligates Israelites to stand in the presence of God three times a year, during the holidays of Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. Rabbinic texts abound with descriptions of the processions that occurred, and the uncovered pilgrimage road parallels these details in one exquisite way. One large stone on the side of the thoroughfare, which seems to have no structural purpose whatsoever, may be explained by an ancient Talmudic reference to a stone of claims, which was an ancient sort of lost and found upon which one who had dropped an object while ascending with the throngs of pilgrims would stand and shout to Jerusalem's visitors, hoping that he would be heard and what had been lost would be returned. As I wrote, once perhaps a prosaic place of proclamation, the stone now seems to embody the site itself, a site hidden and now uncovered, as well as the city of Jerusalem, once lost to the Jewish people and now returned. The Pilgrimage Road today offers visitors a unique opportunity to re-experience what Jewish holidays were truly meant to be. Today, approaching from the western portion of the city, one often comes to the Temple Mount while descending. But the pilgrimage was supposed to be an aliyah, an ascension, a journey to a spiritual summit. Walking up that pilgrimage road, hundreds of thousands, millions of visitors would have sung songs of ascent from the Psalms. To walk in their footsteps today is to understand what Jerusalem meant to them. The historian Martin Goodman joins his own description of Jerusalem in that time with selections from the Christian Book of Acts, which references the diversity in Jerusalem during that period. Goodman writes, quote, "The presence of the temple turned Jerusalem into a magnet for Jews, not just from the Judean countryside, but from all over the Jewish world. There were dwelling at Jerusalem Jews, devout men out of every nation under heaven, Parthians and Medes, and Elamites, and the inhabitants of Mesopotamia and Judea and Cappadocia, of Pontus and Asia, of Phrygia and Pamphylia, of Egypt and the parts of Libya around Cyrene, and visitors from Rome, both Jews and proselytes, Cretans and Arabians, each, as the author of Acts noted, using their own language. International pilgrimage was encouraged by the ease and comparative safety of transport around the Mediterranean world ensured by Roman power, particularly after Pompey's campaign in 67 had denied to pirates their former bases in coastal Cilicia, and thus reduced dramatically the safe havens from which they could operate against shipping. Pilgrims brought with them some of the wealth they had accumulated in other countries and spent it in Jerusalem as an act of piety. The result was a population as culturally heterogeneous as the rainbow population of the city of Rome, with one major difference. Almost everyone in Jerusalem, apart from the small Roman garrison, was religiously committed to the Jewish God. Such commitment could take many different forms, as will be seen, but everyone in Jerusalem knew that this was a Jewish city." End quote. So Goodman writes, and while this was always true about Jerusalem, it was, as Goodman further notes, especially so during the Shalosh Regalim, the three major festivals of the year. Josephus gives us a rough calculation of how many Jews would have been in Jerusalem during Passover, based on the assumption that each Paschal lamb was eaten by a group of 10 to 20, and, therefore, based on 255,600 Paschal offerings brought one year, he comes to a total of 2,700,000. To this, Goodman adds, quote, "Josephus's arithmetic, or the text, is at fault, since the total should be 2,556,000. And it is not unlikely either that he exaggerated the numbers, or that the manuscripts have been corrupted, or both. But the implication of his story is clear enough. The number of pilgrims was staggeringly large," end quote. This was Passover. Equally joyous and beautiful would have been Shavuot, Pentecost, also known as Chag HaBikurim, the festival of new fruit. The Mishnah, also cited by Goodman, describes the pilgrims from all over the land, their baskets laden with the first fruits of the harvest, brought as a gift to the temple. I cite the translation quoted by Goodman. Quote, "They that are near to Jerusalem bring fresh figs and grapes, and those that are far off bring dried figs and raisins. Before them goes the ox, having its horns overlaid with gold and a wreath of olive leaves on its head. The flute is played before them until they come to Jerusalem. When they came near to Jerusalem, they sent messengers before them and bedecked their first fruits. The rulers and the prefects and the treasurers of the temple go forth to meet them. According to the honor due to them that came in, used they to go forth. And all the craftsmen in Jerusalem rise up before them and greet them, saying, Brethren, men of such and such a place, you are welcome." End quote. What this Mishnah teaches us is that every Jew from near and far found his or her place in the larger whole, found a sense of belonging in Jerusalem, as did those non-Jews who came to the city to commune with the God of Abraham who dwelled in Jerusalem. And it is only with this in mind that we can understand why the rabbis described one holiday celebration, that of Sukkot, as the most joyous moment of the Jewish year. With the harvest concluded, men, women, and children came from all over the world and connected to one another. According to the Talmud, it was during the celebrations of that holiday that the leader of the Sanhedrin during the Herodian era uttered these enigmatic words in the temple, "Im ani kan hakol kan, v'im ein ani kan, mi kan." If I am here, then all is here, and if I am not here, then who is here? The seeming self-centeredness of this statement cannot, of course, reflect its true meaning, as the man who uttered these words, Hillel, was celebrated, as we have seen, for his humility. In the profoundly psychological reading of My Grandfather by Aaron Soloveitchik, Hillel, at this exultantly joyous occasion, was pondering the nature of joy itself. His reference to ani, if I am here, was meant to describe the internal I, the essence of his identity. Hillel's point, my grandfather explained, was that most forms of rejoicing, or at least purported rejoicing, are often in no way connected to one's covenantal calling, to the essence of who one is called to be, to the essence of who one is. But this, for Judaism, is not genuine joy. It is a mere escapism. And thus Hillel was making an important point at a joyous moment in the temple while standing in the locus of religious life. Im ani kan, if one's I is here, if one's joy places one's identity within the context of a larger whole, within one's covenantal community, endowing one's life with resplendent meaning. Then all is here. Then the rejoicing is justified. But if not, if what is occurring is not an extension of one's truest self, but is rather a defiance of it or an escaping from it, then the joy is not genuine. It was on the Temple Mount, surrounded by fellow worshippers of the God of Abraham, that those assembled experienced true belonging and therefore true meaning. That is why the Talmud insists that one who did not see this celebration never truly experienced joy in one's life. Joy is an extension of meaning, and meaning is found in belonging. In an immensely moving moment in Jerusalem this past month, the opening ceremonies of the new Knesset featured the reading of a psalm of ascent by Moshe Holzberg, whose parents, Chabad emissaries, were murdered by terrorists in Mumbai in 2008. The psalm read by Moshe Holzberg at that moment was one that was sung by pilgrims ascending the road to the temple. I rejoiced when they said unto me, let us ascend unto the house of the Lord. That psalm contains prayers for peace. May there be peace in your palaces, well-being in your great halls. These words would have been uttered by Jews on the pilgrimage road, and given the violence of the Herodian era, these prayers would have resonated. But those Jews would have concluded the psalm with verses that illustrated how the house of God bound them together, saying, in Jerusalem, L'man achai v're'aya dabrana shalom bach, for the sake of my brothers and friends, I will speak peace to you. For the sake of the house of the Lord, I will seek your good. To walk the pilgrimage road is to discover how Jerusalem binds Jews together and to understand what Jerusalem is meant to be. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.